Hello, and welcome to episode 46 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. I am Keith Carter, a displaced Clevelander, but a lifelong obsessive Cavs fan. I'm joined tonight by my co-host Arnav Chabra. Arnav is a graduate student at MIT and one of the world's foremost experts on NBA statistical esoterica. He's a boon to the show, and we're glad to have him. How's it going, Arnav?
It's going really well. How did you enjoy the game today?
I've enjoyed it a lot better than most of the games over the last 2 weeks. The Cavs just got done thumping the Timberwolves by, 25, 28, something like
28,
that?
28, yeah. It feels so good to have a win after having a losing record in January.
Yeah, I think that was, LeBron's first losing month in...
Since 2006, March 2006, I think, yeah. It's crazy. Yeah,
pretty ugly. Okay, so we got to unpack this game, but first, a little bit of show meta. My desperate plea to get more listener involvement sort of worked. We got three emails, and one of those was from a former roommate of Josh's, so I don't know if that counts. So while that's infinitely more emails than we'd receive for the previous 10 episodes, I still think we can do better. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. Okay, on to the game. Huge win. Cavs looked good doing it and did it again without Kevin Love.
Tristan Thompson stepped up a lot, I think. And something interesting about Kyrie Irving's game today, it felt more like a John Wall type of game than a typical Kyrie Irving game where he'd have an efficient night from the floor, but he wouldn't have as many assists as John Wall would. But that was not the case today. It was completely opposite. He wasn't efficient at all in terms of scoring the basketball, but he was very efficient in terms of setting up his teammates.
Yeah, 14 points on 18 shots tonight, only one of six from three, but he had a career high, 14 assists, I think, right?
That's correct, yeah. And only one turnover, which is great. 14-1 assist-to-turnover ratio is ridiculous. Even LeBron had 12 assists and two turnovers only.
Yeah, the Cavs had only 10 as a team, and they had a season-high 37 assists. So, I mean, look, LeBron and Irving had 26, so they were off to a good start there. But, they moved the ball very nicely tonight.
Yeah, they did. One thing, I don't know if you've noticed this, but one thing I've noticed is that I feel like Kyrie has two modes, one in which he goes into a scoring mode, or he'll go into a sort of a passing mode. And in both of those, I think he overdoes whichever mode he's in. So he'll forget about passing completely for a while and just completely focus on scoring. And on the other side, he'll kind of forget about scoring and he'll just overpass sometimes. Like in some of these possessions, he had wide open layups / shots and he was passing it up to Tristan as a lob or someone at the 3-point line, which is okay, I guess, against a bad team. But against the Warriors, you want to take the highest percentage shot, right? I wish he could find a way to balance those two.
Yeah, I think he's just better. I think he's just not quite as comfortable switching between those two modes as, I mean, look, LeBron is maybe the best ever.
I think the best thing about LeBron is people will ask you, right, what does he do well? I wouldn't say he's the greatest scorer in NBA history. I mean, I think KD's certainly better. I wouldn't say he's the best passer in NBA history, but I think he's the best sort of mix of the two, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, he looks to see what the defense is giving him that play or, that quarter or that game, and he molds his game to maximally exploit whatever they're giving him. And
right, exactly.
I think, it's incredible. Did you enjoy watching Karl Anthony Towns?
Yeah, no, he was great. I mean, he abused Tristan a lot, actually, and even Fry, which isn't that hard, I guess, but...
Yeah, they bizarrely had Fry on him for the first 5 minutes of the game, and Towns, I think, started 4-for-4. And the Timberwolves were actually up 10-2 at one point in this game.
Yeah, and then the Cavs were 7-of-7 or something after Kyrie got that technical.
Right. Yeah, Towns' box scores are just always so impressive. He had 26 points on 19 shots, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 turnover, a steal, and 2 blocks, no fouls.
And this doesn't correlate perfectly, but his defense in general this season has been bad. I mean, you can use your eye test, you can use defensive RPM, or you can even look at this game. He wasn't doing a good enough job on the pick and roll with like Tristan, and like Tristan was abusing him.
Tristan scored 18 points on 11 shots, and you know Tristan never scores 18 points except he's now done it two games in a row, I think.
And then he also hit his free throws, which is the thing, which is what's stopping him most of these times, right? Like he's scared to go up sometimes because he knows he's going to miss those free throws.
Yeah, did you hear the big news about Tristan Thompson and his free throw shooting today?
Kyle Korver's teaching him, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a kind of funny video on Cleveland.com. Somebody shared it with me on Twitter of Thompson, you know, taking a bunch of free throws at Korver and Vitaly Potapenko and one of the other assistant coaches, just sort of watching him and telling him. And, you know, Tristan doing that thing where he, you know, really earnestly nods and, you know, right, takes the advice to heart. And yeah.
I'll say this. If it's a real improvement, I'm glad we got Korver. But if it took Kyle Korver for him to fix his free throw shooting, there's a real problem with our shooting coaches.
I strongly agree. I will say I do not think Tristan's 4 of 5 tonight is representative of any future returns.
But if he can even get to like 60%, that's way better than whatever 45 he was at before.
Yeah, I'm worried. Actually, you're the one who first made me worried about this. I'm worried about what will happen in the playoffs if Thompson is still shooting 50%.
Honestly, he made eight in a row, and that should have at least fixed some of his percentage. Honestly, I'm going to go quickly check here. You can keep talking.
Yeah, I mean, it concerns me because, you know, the Cavs score well over a point per possession. And what's nice about putting them on the line is it just gives the other team a good opportunity to sort of rest. It slows the game down. And so if a team is trying to stop the Cavs from going on one of their spurty runs, they can just start fouling Tristan. And if he can only make half his free throws, they're going to get 1 point per possession there. And that's not as good as what they would, you know, hope to get running their offense normally. So, yeah, I just think that, like, once the playoffs roll around, some team could exploit that, but we'll see.
One thing that's been, it hasn't been fixed. This problem hasn't been fixed by any means, but one thing that's been sort of improved, I guess, if you want to put it that way, is that you can't foul off the ball. Like, you can't hack off the ball now in the last 2 minutes of each quarter. That's correct, right?
Right. It used to be the last 2 minutes of halves.
No, it used to be the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter only, right?
Okay. Okay. So now there's 8 minutes of safe zone instead of 2 minutes of safe zone.
Right. So there's and then also like you don't want to start fouling before the last 2 minutes of every quarter because at that point you'll put the other team in bonus. So there's some disincentive to do it and it's higher than before, but it's, if a person's shooting 40% from the line, you definitely have to foul them.
Right.
But yeah. Also, by the way, he's up to 50% now because he made 8 in a row, so that helps.
Right. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, it's just something to keep an eye on. I'm not, like, panicked about it. I'm just
as long as he can get to, like, 60% by the playoffs, I'll be happy.
I don't think that's going to happen. He'd have to shoot basically 70% the rest of the
way. He doesn't shoot that many, though, right? Like, he only shoots 3 a game, so let's see. I mean, yeah, we'll have to see.
Yeah. Watching Ricky Rubio is always sort of fun. He had a very similar game to Irving. I mean, he had 14 points, 13 assists, but he turned it over more. And he struggled defensively a bit against Kay Felder, even.
Yeah. Which I think you mentioned this, right? Like after his knee surgery, he has not looked the same, at least athletically and even defensively, I would say.
His entire career, he's been sort of going with having injuries. Various issues. But yeah, he's had an ankle thing. He's had a knee thing. He's had some sort of hand thing.
Injuries are so underrated in terms of like how much of an effect they have. Because it's not just the missed time. It's like after you come back, it takes a while to get back.
Yeah, you have to rebuild that muscle memory. Maybe you need to build new muscle memory because, you know, you still have like a little bit of residue from that injury. It's tough.
The only guy that I've seen that doesn't have a down period after an injury is, I think, Russell Westbrook, honestly. Everyone else I've seen has a huge effect on their play.
Yeah. Some people, even like when they take rest games, we've been meaning to do some research on
like,
this.
Happens but it happens to Love like, a lot. If he takes one or two rest games, like it takes him a while to get back to his normal.
That's exactly rhythm. What I was going to say. Yeah. But that doesn't seem to impact LeBron, or at least to my noticing.
LeBron doesn't rest that much, though.
Yeah, like, fair point.
people talk about him taking games off. He does not take that many games off, and he plays 40 minutes a night. So,
how did you feel about his minute load tonight?
What was it, like 34?
34 minutes, 28 seconds in a 28-point win.
It should have been 30, honestly. Like, he was, I think, I don't know if he was stat padding. I think there was some sort of a number he was trying to get to. I think there's some milestone he's trying to get to, right?
He wanted to be number 13 on some list of something.
Yeah, I think that's what he was. Because that's the thing, right? Like, there, I understand there are games where he has to play a lot because our team is just not that deep, but at least, like, in these games where you're blowing them out, you can save him a lot of minutes. Like, he could have easily only played 29 tonight, and we still would have won by, like, 15.
Yeah. If there was one adjustment I would like to see Lou make with LeBron's minutes is, so in the first half, they like resting LeBron at the end of the first quarter, then bringing him in at the beginning of the second to run with the bench unit. I'm fine with that. They try to mirror that in the second half. They bench him with a little bit of time left in the third quarter, and then they bring him in to start the fourth. The problem is, if it's a close and tight game,
he's going to play the entire fourth.
And sometimes they accidentally play him the entire third. So then they end up in this situation where, like, well, is he going to play all 24 minutes of the second half? Tonight's game, they did the right thing, which is they rested him at the end of the third quarter. But then they brought him in to start the fourth. The Cavs were up 21. And then they played him for 8 minutes before they took him out. They should, if he can make one change, it would be when they're up by 10 or more at the start of the fourth, I think it's okay to let that get down to 5 or 4 before bringing in LeBron for his customary time with the second unit. I know that that does mean that you're slightly less likely to win the game, but if over the course of the season LeBron plays 2.5 fewer minutes per game, I think it's worth it.
Yeah, 2.5 is a lot per game, at least. Yeah, like that would bring him down to 35 instead of 37.5 or whatever he's at.
Right.
Also, what do you think of sort of staggering his minutes so he plays more in the second half than he does in the first?
Well, I think I know why you're asking this, but yeah, so I'll just say, yeah, I strongly think they should do that. Points in the second half are worth more than points in the first. Do you want to explain why that is?
Simply because, I mean, they affect the win probability more. So close games and late games affect win probability more, because if there's a huge lead in the first quarter, it doesn't mean as much because there's way more time for the other team to come back.
But I think there's also a gravity aspect.
Yeah, like even like refing, everything sort of, because like, you know, if the team is up, they're going to start playing more on the defensive end. They're going to start, you know, taking less risky shots, quote unquote.
Right.
They're not going to run their offense. They're going to try to waste time, and all that affects their offense. So like there's a gravitational effect for sure.
So points late are worth more than points early. And so if they're going to skew his minutes, I would definitely skew them more to the second half. But that level of sophistication is so far from what the Cavs are doing with LeBron's minutes that it's a pipe dream.
Yeah, I agree. Tristan had 8 offensive rebounds.
That's ridiculous. He's so good at offensive rebounding. And it has a cascade effect because the other team is so afraid of Tristan hitting an offensive rebound, but they have like 4 dudes down there. It's great.
You know how like a lot of teams have given up offensive rebounding in recent years, and the reasoning behind that has been they want to get back in transition, right?
Yep.
But here's the thing. If a guy like Tristan is trying to rebound and you have 3 guys trying to box him out, like you're preventing the other team from running in transition too because they're so busy trying to defensive rebound.
Yeah, there was a study done, I can't remember, it was on ESPN.com. It might have been by John Hollinger. He was trying to figure out the value of a steal. This was done like 6 years ago or something. And they decided the value of a steal. Yeah, maybe it was. Although that would have been pre-530. But in any case, they decided the value of a steal is like 9 points after you factor in all this stuff. I wouldn't be surprised. Like offensive rebounds, especially if the other team is worried about you getting offensive rebounds, are so valuable because it changes the way the other team is playing and obviously get you another possession on offense.
Right. If someone like Kyrie is trying to offensive rebound consistently, that's not going to be good because A, he's not good at it and he's not going to be able to run back in transition, and B, like they're not scared, so they're not even going to try to do much about it. So maybe he'll get 1 or 2 extra ones, but that's not worth, losing people in transition running back.
But yeah, someone but like Tristan,
he has gravity on those things, man.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. I wish we had a better way of like quantifying that value, but I bet it's higher than even most people think.
Yeah.
And I also wonder about someone like Russell Westbrook, who's always hanging around trying to poach rebounds. I wonder if like his rebound, I don't wonder, I strongly suspect his rebounds are worth less than an average rebound, but we don't have good metrics to measure that yet.
His is interesting because like he definitely stat pads a little bit when it comes to rebounding, but those, when he gets a rebound, they're essentially trying to run him in transition so they can get there before the defense is sent. And that's a good thing. So like you want the ball in his hands as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe that offsets like his hawking for rebounds. Who knows?
And they're better at rebounding with him on the floor. So it's not like he's hurting the team in any way. Sure, his rebounding box score numbers are inflated. That's fine. But like it's not hurting the team. So who cares?
He is 11th in the NBA, last I checked, in rebounds.
There's no way he's that good of a rebounder, obviously. But he's probably the best rebounding guard I've ever seen. Well, maybe Michael was better, but he's up there for sure.
Yeah, he's a strong rebounder. He's so strong, and his energy level is so consistently high.
Did you see that story about him not being able to dunk in high school or something ridiculous? Like, apparently, as a senior, he couldn't even dunk a ball.
I know that he was not very highly recruited.
He was not, especially out of high school. Like he was better in UCLA, but he was pretty bad. I wouldn't say bad, but he wasn't that good in high school at all.
That makes sense. That explains why he wasn't recruited.
What pick was he, like 15th, I think?
He was. Oh, well, the NBA draft, wasn't he higher?
7th, maybe, I don't know. I'll have to check.
Okay, anyway, enough on Russ. We should talk about both Wiggins and Korver. Which do you want to do first?
We can start with Korver since he's on our team.
So he had a good night tonight. He had a new high in points as a Cavalier. I think he had...
Is that correct? I thought he had a high against Sacramento, which was like 20 or something, right?
Yeah, he had 20 tonight, though. Oh, so maybe he tied his high or something.
Oh, that's right. Anyway, he had 20 tonight, yeah.
Yeah, he had 20 points on 11 shots, no turnovers, two assists, and a rebound. Looked good tonight. He did a few new things as well.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. Would you say, up until this point, including tonight's game, the Cavs have used them optimally?
No, I think they're still upside.
Sure. And then what do you think his true shooting percentage has been with the Cavs? And what do you think his three-point percentage has been with the Cavs?
Oof.
Just guess those numbers. I mean, whatever you think.
I don't know. I know he's shooting pretty well over the last five games. I would guess his three-point percentage with the Cavs is like 44%, and true shooting is like high 50s. Let's say 58.
Okay. So his true shooting is 60. Okay. And his three-point percentage has been 43. It's not 44, but it's close enough. 42.6. So I think my point here is that in terms of offensive production, he has not been bad. Like, he hasn't been the Kyle Korver we wanted, because we were expecting, you know, like 67 true shooting percentage.
Yep.
So what I'm trying to say is, like, I think everyone agrees that he hasn't been used optimally, and he's still been pretty efficient. Like, 60 true shooting percentage is not bad. Ideally, from someone who's not creating his own shot, you want higher. But I think there's a lot of upside in terms of what we can do. Like, we can spot him up more. We can run less of those pin down screens for him, etc.
Yeah, you were texting during the game, and we were talking a little bit before we recorded. Korver's role in Atlanta was so often he would run around one or two, or sometimes even three off ball screens. And after running around the court twice, he would, you know, get barely open and fire a three. He's been weaning himself off of that a little bit. He still does it sometimes, and maybe there'll be some value in that later in the season. But for now, I think he can get more just sort of straight spot up.
Like open a run in transition, sort of spot up before anyone gets there, because LeBron will find you. Or like, you know, or just like sit in the corner and like let LeBron's gravity figure it out. Simple as that sometimes.
There was a pass today. Korver was on the sort of bottom of my screen on the right break, and LeBron was on the left break, and he found him by throwing it across the court and, you know, went past like four hands trying to intercept it, but none of them got it, and Korver made the open three. I think Korver will get better at knowing where he needs to put himself so that LeBron can get him the ball.
And, exactly.
I mean, the sky's the limit there. I mean, that guy can make open shots like no other.
Like if he's open, I mean, I expect a greater than 50% chance he'll hit it.
Yeah.
And the problem so far has been, I think, what David Griffin wanted, and I think what Tyronn Lue has been trying to implement, is that he was hoping that with Kyle Korver, he could have sort of quote-unquote another playmaker, even though he's not a playmaker in the traditional sense. But you can still run sets for him, specifically geared towards getting him open shots, and all you have to do is run around guys. But it wasn't as easy as I think David Griffin expected, because it requires a lot of off-ball screening, and it requires those guys to be in perfect sync, which has not been the case for the Cavs. Like, these guys run into each other trying to do that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit like a... Yeah, it was like a comedy act the first few games. Like, you know, yeah, Tristan so and, like, you know, Love would, like, trip over each other trying to screen for Korver. It was ugly. But, yeah, they're getting better, and they've got, you know, another 2 months to get it right. So, I think... Yeah, I expect those shooting percentages to trickle up even higher.
And even he's not the same player he was 2 years ago. He was way better at making those runaround screen shots than he is now. So
yeah, well,
they're not bad. Like, he'll fight him at 38-40%, but it's not the 50% he'll shoot in spotting up.
Right. Yeah, Father Time is undefeated, as they say.
And injuries, but yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, thanks, Deli. Okay, on to Andrew Wiggins. So there have been at least three that I saw articles this week asking whether the Cavs regret trading Andrew Wiggins.
Why do we keep having these articles?
Hold on. In the post-game show tonight, it was... Now, look, consider the sources, but it was Jalen Rose and Chauncey Billups, and both of them said how awesome the Cavs would be if they had Wiggins. The commentator asked Rose and Billups if... they wouldn't have traded for Love if they think they still would have had a championship, and they both said yes. Like, my jaw was sort of like dropped. Like, Wiggins stinks, man. He's terrible.
He's not that good, man. He can score like at maybe like sort of average league average, maybe a little below league average efficiency, which is useful as like a sixth man, I think. But like, as a starter, you, especially on a championship level team, you want to be a super efficient scorer or a decently efficient scorer who's a very good playmaker. And he doesn't do either of those, right? Like, he could score 23 points or whatever he scored in 22, 23, but he's doing it at sort of league average efficiency or even less. And he's not a playmaker. He's a terrible passer.
Right. There's some value in league average scoring.
Yeah, there is, for sure. But like,
half the guys are below league average, for example. But... yeah, I mean, let's see. So he's averaging 2.5 assists a game this year, which is really just woefully low. He had zero tonight. And he just doesn't do anything else other than...
he's a bad rebounder. I don't understand how that's possible for someone who's 6'8 and as athletic as he is.
Two rebounds tonight.
He has like one rebound, maybe two.
Right. I mean, look, Kay Felder gets rebounds every once in a while just because as a function of like being out on the floor. Yeah, Felder had one rebound tonight in... half as much time as Wiggins. And, so, you know, Felder's 5'7 or 5'9.
So Felder had about the same rebounding percentage tonight as Andrew Wiggins. And Felder is like 10 inches shorter.
The biggest problem, well, okay, another huge problem with Wiggins is that he's not very good defensively either. He was supposed to be, you know...
He was touted as a positive / lockdown defender even. And it's been kind of quite the opposite. Like, his deficiencies were going to be sort of creating his own shot, and he can kind of do that now, and he's okay at it, but like, his problems have been mostly on the defensive end, actually.
Yep.
He's a bad defender. He's okay on ball, but like, on ball defense doesn't mean that much in the NBA right now. Like, people will set a screen and get you off ball, then what are you going to do after that?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I haven't even I like hesitate to even look, but do you have any idea what his RPM is this year?
Better than last year, I think, but...
He is the... I just found it. He's the 44th best small forward in the NBA by RPM. And look, he's playing 37 minutes a game, which is top 10, so it's not like we've got a small sample size issue here. He's just not very good. Yeah. Maybe he'll get better. I'm starting to...
He's young, so that's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's 21. He just turned... Oh, no, wait, sorry. He'll turn 22 on February 23rd. And... yeah, there's still some time here, but at this point, like, people normally make, you know, quote unquote, the leap in their third year, and he's in his third year, and if anything, he's regressed.
Yeah. And so. There shouldn't be a single Cavs fan who should regret trading Wiggins for Love. We got a championship, and Love was a big part of that. Sure, he didn't play that well in the finals, but I think that's a short-sighted view, because he was really good in the first three rounds, and those rounds were the ones that kept sort of LeBron from going crazy. I think I showed you a stat. LeBron had his lowest usage rate ever in the first three rounds this year than he has ever had in the past.
Right.
And that lowered.
Yeah, that's why he was so rested and so awesome. And
that's why he exploded in seven games of the finals.
And I'm starting to have real concerns about whether LeBron will be able to be as rested this year.
Hopefully we can start to shut him down a little bit here.
Yeah, we've beaten that horse to death, so we don't need to go on that anymore. Okay, so that's the game tonight. Did you want to say anything else about tonight's game before we move on?
Zach LaVine had a pretty poor game. He's usually way more efficient. Oh, 8 points on like 18 shooting possessions. He was bad tonight. He was
minus 25. He was
losing everything. Yeah,
he was the worst player on either team in terms of plus minus. Yeah, 8 points on 18 shots.
He's also not a good defender, but his money maker is that he's a very efficient shooter. I think he has like a 60 true shooting percentage this season, which is really good for that age.
Not anymore.
No?
Not
well, maybe
after
not tonight. But you get the point.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw, in other Zach LaVine news, I saw he's not going to participate in the dunk contest this year, which is too bad.
Who's participating, do you know?
I don't think they've announced it yet, but he would be a two-time defending champion if he showed up. But
yeah, should be one time, but we'll see.
Well, getting all worked up about the winner of the dunk contest is one of the less.
Actually, he's down to 58% now. Huh, that's a big drop from earlier in the season. But still, like, it's above league average. It's really good for a 30-year player who was supposed to be a project.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on what the Timberwolves should do? So they're 19 and 30. Their point differential is really bad. They have these like three guys, four guys, five guys. I mean, their starting lineup, Wiggins, Dieng, Towns, Rubio, and LaVine are all supposed to be, pretty good. But they seem to be less than
the sum of their parts. They're just so bad defensively in their big three. Like, Towns is one of the worst defenders, one of the worst center defenders, if you look at.
He was the worst for a while by defensive RPM. I don't know if he still is.
Let me quickly check. But yeah, he's definitely got to be down there.
He was worse than like Okafor.
Oh, God. That's when you know it's bad, right?
He's not in the bottom 10 anymore anyway.
Anyway, so Wiggins is a bad defender. Like, LaVine is obviously a really bad defender. So the point, I think, here is that they need to either trade one of these guys. And it shouldn't be Towns. It should be either LaVine or Wiggins. And they should find some sort of a positive defensive, like a really good defensive player, someone that can anchor defense either from the wing or from the center position or from the power forward position, whatever.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean,
and then need better shooters. Like, who are the shooters on this team? Carl Anthony Towns is not a good, not that good of a shooter, honestly. He's a good mid-range shooter, but his three-point shooting has tanked.
Yep.
Wiggins is not a good shooter.
Wiggins
can't shoot is a good shooter.
Three.
Rubio cannot shoot at all. Cheng cannot shoot. Like, Muhammad can shoot, but like everyone else is not that good of a shooter on this team.
Yeah. I actually misspoke. Towns is the second worst defensive center by RPM.
Who's the worst?
Enes Kanter is worse. Jahlil Okafor is third to worst.
Well, Jahlil Okafor doesn't play that many minutes, but I bet he's worse in actual.
I would take Towns defensively over Okafor. I would take basically myself over Okafor in almost any situation.
God, Okafor's so bad.
Poor Sixers. Okay, anyway. All right, let's move on. So the Cavs had a weird thing today. They had a free agent. They had a mid-season free agent mini camp where they invited in four guys. The four guys were Mario Chalmers, Lance Stevenson, Kirk Heinrich, and Jordan Farmar. And presumably they're vetting them to see which one of the four of them they'll use to fill their empty roster spot.
I have a question. How long has this spot been empty for? It's been a month now, right?
Yeah, at least.
Okay. So why didn't this happen before? Like, if you have an empty roster spot, why aren't you using that as a sort of practice first?
So if they sign one of these guys, it'll be like, what, $1 million? Is that what the vet minimum is for those guys?
Well, I'm saying, do 10-day contracts. Those aren't that much. It's like $8,000 or whatever. Plus whatever tax, like $16,000. Who cares?
Are we past the 10-day? No, I guess we're not.
You can give 10-day contracts.
Do you think one of these guys would sign a 10-day contract?
Yeah. I mean, these guys don't have a contract. They would do anything at this point.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess you're right.
Especially Farmer.
Let me just explain my thinking since I half picked three thoughts there. My thought was, in order to sign one of these guys, they'd have to give them $1 million. And with the luxury tax, that ends up, they have to pay like another 3.25. So that ends up being like $4.25 million to get one of these guys in. And yeah, my thought was they wanted to wait as long as possible to see if somebody better makes themselves available. So
if that's the case, I agree. But I'm pretty sure these guys can sign 10-day contracts. That was my thing.
Let's say they signed Kirk Heinrich, say. Actually, let's say they signed Lance Stevenson, because I think that's the one they're most likely to get here. Let's say they signed him, and then Darren Williams became available. They could just waive Stevenson, right, and then go get Williams?
Sure, but that would cost them so much money.
I know. It would cost them $4 million. Twice to do that, but hypothetically they could do that if money was no object.
Yeah. Or I mean, I think what they would actually end up doing is waive Chris Anderson. But yeah,
right. Yeah, so I mean, really, they really have two empty roster spots because Anderson. They're gonna
either
waive
looking for a spot, or if they can't find another team to take him off of their hands, then they'll waive him anyway. So
They're trying to trade Bergman so they don't have to eat his salary.
Exactly.
But
it's gonna be. They're gonna have to give up something for it, and then they actually don't even have cash anymore, because there's a limit to how much you can spend in a year in terms of like actual cash, and they spend that on Felder, and in the last trade.
So everything has to be league minimum. Is that how that works?
Oh, no, I'm just saying, like, you know how in trade you can give cash considerations just to sweeten the deal?
Oh, I see. They can't even do that anymore.
They can't even do that anymore because they wasted it on Felder. Well, and then on this last Korver deal, they gave him some money.
Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, look, the Cavs have – so they have the empty roster spot. They have the Bergman spot. Bergman's out for the rest of the year, so, like, that is an effectively empty roster spot. And really, McRae could be considered –
McRae could be cut, but I don't know why they guaranteed his deal.
They're not going to. They're going to keep those guys.
They already did.
Yeah, I know, but they could still waive him, but they're not going to.
Yeah, but
then
they have to pay money, right? That's the issue.
Yeah.
Now you have to pay him the rest of his salary.
All right, so Mario Chalmers, Lance Stevenson, Kirk Heinrich, Jordan Farmer. Do you want any of these guys?
Not Kirk Heinrich. I would have taken Mario Chalmers if he didn't have an Achilles injury. I don't think he's going to look...
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing with the Mario.
I'd take Ray Allen if he was 32, but...
Yeah. Mario Chalmers is what? 30 years old, so like he might come back from this injury, because most of the people who have this injury are like really old. So like he may come back in a year or two, but this year
he had a ruptured Achilles, right?
Yeah,
so same injury as Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, but Kobe was like 35 or whatever.
I know.
What I'm saying is like he may come back someday. I'm not saying it's probable, but it's not going to be this season. It's going to take him at least a year or two to get back to a decent level. And so he's probably not going to be that effective this season. Then who else is left? Farmer
and Stevenson.
I'll take Stevenson. Just take Stevenson.
Yeah, I mean, Stevenson, I don't like his attitude, but whatever. I didn't like J.R. Smith's attitude, and he's been wonderful. So what do I know about attitude? Stevenson, I think, could be decent against the Warriors, because I think he could play defensively against them.
Yeah.
And that has some value. And he can shoot a little bit. When he was on the Pacers, he was way better.
He can pass, actually, which is kind of an underrated passer, I would say. But he has that sort of that chucker mentality, like Nick Young.
Yeah, he worries me attitude-wise.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know how to deal with that.
His skill doesn't... I like his skill. But yeah, his attitude absolutely is concerning. But hey, beggars can be choosers. So like,
right, I mean, better than zero, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, worst case scenario, you bench him and you play with what you got.
Right. So that brings us to the Carmelo Anthony rumors. So the initial rumor was Carmelo for Kevin Love. The Cavs rightly immediately rejected that. What I saw today is that the Cavs are actually interested in Carmelo, but they don't want to give up Love. How do you feel about that, and how do you think that might work?
Interesting question. So I went to the ESPN trade, what is it called? The trade machine. Yeah. So the only way you can do it is you have to include Fry and you have to include Shumpert, and then you can throw in guys like McRae, Felder, just garbage, essentially, people you don't care about. So the only big pieces there would be Fry and Shumpert. If you were New York, would you do that trade? I wouldn't do that trade. Like, I know you want to get rid of Carmelo, but do you really want Shumpert and Fry in return?
I'm
like, what
not
does that
sure...
get you?
I would do that trade for the Cavs, which I'll get to in a minute. But yeah, there's way that's I would do that as a New York
GM?
I don't think I would do that just because Shumpert has three more years left on his deal after this I think.
It's not a 4-year contract, yeah.
And Fry has 1 year left after this? No, this is Fry's last year.
No, he has another one, I think, next season.
Okay. And yeah, I mean, one of the reasons to trade Carmelo would be to create cap space, but they wouldn't even
or just have some guy who can come off. Yeah, exactly. Who can create cap space next season, or maybe even someone who's cheaper or something. But yeah,
or just to get rid of Carmelo, like maybe they would be willing to almost get rid of him for free, just so that they don't have to deal with the saga anymore.
A second round pick or one maybe late first or something.
Right, and they can intentionally tank the rest of this season to try to get a better pick.
Exactly. So I think they should be at least looking for picks and not for players in return, honestly. And if they are players in return, I think they should be looking for people who come off the books pretty quickly, which Shumpert is not.
Yeah, I wonder if Shumpert, Fry, or 2021 first and Felder would get it done.
Yeah, that would definitely get it done because it's a 2021 first. But
yeah, that's going to be a decent pick because LeBron's going to be.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen then, but that's 4 years, man. That would be a good pick, actually. But I wouldn't want to do that. I don't want to give up that pick, honestly.
Well, I'm not even sure I want Carmelo even. I mean, look, right. I would take him for free, obviously. But the problem with Carmelo is what does he do to our offense that Kevin Love doesn't?
Yeah, exactly. Like, is he going to spot up? Like, he's a good spot-up shooter. Like, if you look at his numbers, he can shoot 43% from three if he's just
planning. I think he's a better shooter than Kevin Love.
I agree. I do too. But he regressed a little bit because of his injuries, but I think so.
Yeah, but he's probably more covered than Love usually is in terms
I agree with you on that. But the problem is his rebounding is his total rebound percentage, same as Channing Frye. And our rebound just tanks when Frye is in the game. Like, we cannot do anything.
Our rebounding really struggles when Love in general is not available. We've been
exactly like, and, so, and we haven't been a great rebounding team. We've actually been like bottom 10 or something, I think, this year. I was looking at it, defensive rebounding at least.
Yep. Yeah. So like, what does Anthony?
And he's worse defensively, honestly. Like, he does not move his feet.
No, he doesn't. Look, it would be interesting to see him fully engaged for a playoff run. I think he has some like intriguing upside, but not.
And do you think he'll be willing to take a sort of a step back in terms of his shooting? Like, is he okay with just standing in the corner taking jumpers?
I don't know. And then who would you even start? I guess you would. How would that even work?
Like, you'd have to bench one of Melo or Love, but I would definitely bench Melo.
Yeah, I'm sure he's gonna love that.
Yeah, and then the whining starts, and then
can you just imagine? Like, ESPN would just they would have to like create like a new sub channel to do like all the other coverage because their main channel would be totally obsessed with.
If you can guarantee him being locked in, and him taking a backseat to these three guys, then I would consider trading for him with like Fry, Shumpert, or whatever. But I'm not convinced he can do that.
The thing is, Fry's
a better shooter.
I just don't know whether I would do this or not. And because I don't know, I think I would err on the side of not. But Fry is willing to stand in the corner and just shoot. And he's not going to whine about it. He'll just do it. And he'll be good at it. He's terrible defensively and he can't rebound. But there's no difference between him and Anthony's a better
defensive player than Channing Frye. Channing Frye is really tough this season.
That's not saying much, but yeah, you're right. Carmelo is not an elite defender, but he's not atrocious either. He's sort of middle
of
the pack.
Frye has reached atrocious levels this season, honestly.
Yeah, he's not trying.
In a pickle, like, Carmelo can get his own shot, right? Like, it's not going to be like 60 true shooting percentage. It's not going to be that efficient, but sometimes like in those situations, even a 45-50% shot is good.
Yeah, true. You also lose Shumpert's defense in this hypothetical trade that would never happen. Like, it's...
Yeah, so here's the thing. I don't care about it. I don't think his defense is that good anymore. But the thing is, you need wing players. You need bodies, especially when you're playing Golden State. Because you want to run around those screens and you want to switch a lot. And you need guys like Shumpert for that. Like, I know he's not very... His shooting is up and down all the time. His defense is dropped off, whatever. But at least he's a body that can do something out there. Yeah. And he can at least hit open threes nowadays. So,
Yeah. I mean, Shumpert still has some upside, too. He's only, what, 26? Like, there's still a chance that he could...
If he can stay injury-free, that's been his problem, right?
It's look how he's improved offensively as he stayed injury-free this season.
I mean, I don't know if he can improve. His skill or whatever was never the issue. It was always the fact that he's always injured and then always... You know, like I mentioned before in the pod, like, when you're injured, you essentially reset sort of your development clock back. And then you have to start again figuring everything out once you come back.
Yeah, you start again from, like, behind where you were. It's tough.
Exactly. It's really tough, man. And even Kyrie, that's been his problem, right? Like, I bet he would have been way better than he is right now if he hadn't been so injured.
Absolutely. I mean, look what Curry became once he finally became injury-free.
And even, like, look at Kyrie, the difference between his regular season last year and his playoff run last year when he was much better.
He was awfully good in the playoffs last year. Let's see. There was another Cavs tidbit. I saw that J.R. Smith had the cast removed from his right hand today, and he was working out
with his
left-handed
today.
Yeah, he was at the arena, so that's good. I don't know what the timetable is normally. There might be somebody who, based on when the cast comes off for this injury. Might be able to get us an update, and if we can get that, I'll tweet it out. But yeah, looks like he's at least.
I did the calculation based on the original timeline, and I think what I got was if it's on the more pessimistic side, he's only going to have 17 games before the playoffs start, and if it's on the more optimistic side, he was going to have 25 games before the playoffs start. So
17 should be enough, I think.
17, yeah, it's like. Basically,
I mean, look, I'd rather it be 25, but
17 isn't bad, especially. But it won't be ideal. But then 17 plus, hopefully the first two rounds are easy for us, so that should help too. Right.
That's true. Yeah, he gets another 8 plus just to get back in the flow.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as he doesn't have a setback, I think there's enough time here. It's just that he wasn't playing very well when he got hurt. So,
but then maybe, well, he wasn't playing very well because he wasn't moving that well, right? Like his knee was causing him a lot of issues. So maybe this injury helps rest that knee and he can finally be 100% there.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe this is the way the Cavs will ever rest anybody. You have to like break a bone. Somebody should go snap LeBron's pinky and see if.
No.
That was a joke, everybody.
Let us not do that.
There's a big thing here we haven't talked about. I don't really want to talk about it though, which is this LeBron Charles Barkley brouhaha.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about it. What did you think of LeBron clapping back? And like, actually, what did you think of Barkley's comments that LeBron shouldn't be asking for another backup point guard just because he has two all-stars on his team?
I don't know. So I'm pausing here because I need to think about how much I want to get into this. I want to talk about the Cavs finances and then stuff with regards to that Forbes article, but I don't want to talk about that today. I think that LeBron is perfectly within his rights to be irritated that the Cavs have two empty roster spots that they are doing nothing with because they're trying to save money.
And it's taking a toll on his body. That's you got to remember that, right? Because he's playing the most minutes per game in the league.
Yeah.
So it's affecting LeBron personally, which is affecting the team.
Right. LeBron is absolutely within his rights to be irritated. Objectively, he's in a pretty good situation. The problem is it's probably like maybe the third or fourth best situation in the NBA in terms of like teammates. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. In any case, LeBron's allowed to be irritated. And by putting pressure on the front office, at least they did this like little mini camp thing. Like they probably wouldn't have done that if
they LeBron should have done
didn't.
So long ago. But anyway,
I know. Yeah, I mean, they to the extent that LeBron can use his influence to get them to open up their purses a little bit more, then I guess it kind of worked. As for Barkley, like I think what Barkley said is actually sort of an okay take as well. Like, look, he's got these two supposed you know, super duper stars in Love and Irving. I don't think Irving is a super duper star, but I don't want to relitigate that tonight. I think Love is, and, you know, he's got pretty good teammates, and it's sort of reasonable for Barkley to say, like, hey, what's he whining about? He's already got these two all-stars. That's like a reasonable take. It's not like
it's
totally outrageous.
It's missing context because...
It is. It is, but it's just a guy on TV.
Sure. But I'm saying any given year, Cavs are favored to win a championship, and they'll be heavy favorites in any given year, except right. for these last 2 years, because the team they're going against won 73 games and then added Kevin freaking Durant. So, like,
right. The Warriors are by far the best team of all time this year, and they're better than the team they were last year, which was the best team of all time. Like, it's really unfair that this is the environment that LeBron is in, but
and he's
yeah,
asking
I mean,
for a backup point guard. He's not asking for a super duper star. So I think it's a reasonable request. What I don't agree with him is, I don't think he should have done it publicly. I think he should have just gone to Griffin privately and talked about it.
Sure. But I mean, this is like a minor nit, right? Like, I mean, nobody committed like a huge crime here. Like, LeBron probably shouldn't have quote unquote whined to the media. Barkley, whatever. It doesn't matter. What did you think about LeBron's like specific criticisms of Barkley?
I don't think it was calculated. I think he was just annoyed and he just sort of snapped at them.
Too.
I think he just snapped.
I think he just sort of lost it. People talked about like, oh, he must have done some research. I don't think
so.
I think he just snapped. I do too.
I don't think this was calculated at all. It's not like he went on Google the night before. It's like, oh, I'm going to say this. I'm going to say that. Like, those things are common knowledge. I knew that before too.
I agree.
And like, if you look at it from his perspective, he takes a lot of abuse, sort of quote unquote verbal abuse, if you think about it, like, especially, you know, starting from the decision, all the what everyone said, like, even last year, I mean, I think around January people were saying like, he's a coach killer, he's this, he's that.
Yes, it must be exhausting too. Right. LeBron James is not the kind of guy, I think LeBron James is like me, who's like constantly on Twitter, constantly on Reddit, constantly on Facebook. I'm impressed with his maturity to be able to shut that down in the playoffs. Like, good for frickin' him. Like, that is, that's just something I'm not able to do. And I really admire that about him. But yeah, I mean, I think like he hears all the noise and it bothers him. And yeah, I mean, I'm impressed he doesn't spaz out more often than he rarely does.
And Charles Barkley is objectively a terrible person. Like, I think I sent you that article about sports from Sports Illustrated, right? Like, where,
yes. Yeah,
he should not be on TV. But like you said, like, he's basically a troll on there.
He is. And he's a turd. He's a turd personally, and he's a troll in his TV persona. He's not going anywhere though. I mean, he's probably the most popular sort of NBA analyst.
Maybe Shaq, but it's close.
Yeah, I personally, at least Barkley occasionally says interesting stuff. I don't think Shaq ever says anything interesting. I don't like Shaq as
an analyst. Yeah, but Shaq is less inflammatory, which...
He's way less controversial.
Anyway,
yeah,
there wasn't that much. It's kind of fun for the, I guess, sort of the casual fan, but it doesn't really affect our season at all. Barkley can talk all he wants.
Yeah. I agree. It's just that it's going to dominate the news cycle for at least a couple more days here until
it distracts from the Cavs losing streak, so who cares?
Yeah, well, look, they just won by 30, so maybe the losing streak's over. Look, I think that they'll shake hands at the All-Star game, and that'll be that.
I don't know about that. I think LeBron holds grudges, pretty sure. Like, he specifically said
he didn't want an All-Star game handshake.
Yeah, so. And then he's still talking about the Phil Jackson thing, so he's definitely holding on to grudges here.
Yeah, well, it's within his rights. Yeah. So there's just one more. I have a question for you that I wanted to finish with, but did you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I'm good. Go ahead. What's your question?
What RPM would LeBron James need to have? So I've been thinking I have two things. The first is, you weren't here last episode, but I introduced this idea for a new segment that is about, I just wanted to do like a daily statistical thing, or, you know, once every podcast I wanted to explain some statistic. So today's Kyrie Irving had a dunk today. He got a technical foul in the first quarter, and then like a few possessions later he got a fast break and threw down a two-handed dunk, which sort of struck me as sort of unusual. So I wanted to know how many times Kyrie Irving has dunked in his career. And you can find that data, actually you told me this, it is on NBA Savant, which collates the data from NBA.com's sort of a little bit tricky to use StatsSite and from ESPN Shot Tracker. And you can look up since Kyrie's career started how many dunks he's had. Do you remember what I told you? Do you remember
six,
the answer? 16. He's had 15 total in his career. Six on 16 attempts. So he's missed one.
That's impressive.
Do you have a guess for, so let's see, he's had two this year. He had one last year, four the year before, two the year before, four the year before, three the year before.
What do you think is the most number of dunks in a single game by one person?
I don't know. Do you know the answer to that?
No, I don't know the answer, but what would you guess?
I would guess like...
like someone like DeAndre Jordan. I had like 7.
Yeah, I did look up DeAndre Jordan. He has like 200 dunks this year.
Okay.
LeBron has 69 dunks. Chris Paul, interestingly, 3 inches shorter than Kyrie Irving. How many dunks do you think he's had since 2010, 2011?
25?
Yeah, 13. I was surprised he had any. I don't think I've ever seen him dunk, but...
yeah, can he? I guess he can dunk.
Unfortunately, the data only goes back to 2010, 2011. I wanted to look up like how many Mo Williams had in his career because I remember that one he had in the playoffs against Boston. But yeah, the data only goes back to 2010.
What about Kay Felder? I think he has one, right?
I think I checked Kay Felder. I have this actually in front of me so I can look it up easy. So like Russell Westbrook has 28 dunks this year. Kay Felder.
He surprisingly doesn't dunk as much as people think.
Yeah, I would have expected it to be more. Felder has 0 dunks and 0 attempts. Oh, yeah, I looked up Isaiah Thomas. That's what I looked up. Isaiah Thomas has 0 this year. Let me see if he has any in his career. He has attempted 2 dunks in his career. He's never made one.
Yeah. I think Steph had a couple this year, too.
But Steph has like 3 or 4 a season.
Yeah, he's tall, though. He's 6'3", at least compared to Isaiah Thomas.
Right. Same height as Irving. Well, same listed height. Who knows what the actual story is there. Okay, so that was the first thing. Okay, are you ready for my question?
Yes.
What real plus minus would LeBron James need to have next year before you would question signing him to a 5-year max contract?
5-year max contract at the age of...
because I think that's what he's going to ask for after next season.
I guess you just give it to him. Like, what can you... you can't say no. Right? Like, are you going to say no? Would you rather not have him at all? I'd rather have him. Yeah. Like, I think he'll make it up in the first 2 years, honestly, because he's that
let's
good.
Let's just argue by extremes. Okay. Let's say the Cavs win the championship this year, but next year, LeBron has a real plus minus of, like, say, 3.
Well, okay. No. Okay. I think we have to separate a few things. Like, I don't care about what he does in the regular season. That's the thing. Like, let's say if he's still really good in the playoffs, I don't care.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you're like pinning me down on a technicality here. Okay, let's say that he has a real plus minus of 3 and his postseason performance is commensurate. It's still better than that, but it's sort of commensurate with like that real plus minus of 3 versus, I think his real plus minus this season is like 6.5.
Yeah, but like in the postseason, it's going to be better, hopefully.
Right.
But yeah. I think it depends. Like, is there a reason to believe it was just a one-off thing? Like,
was he injured? Was he really sandbagging? Yeah.
I don't know.
They're going to do it regardless. They're going to give him a 5-year max deal. I'm pretty sure they've handshaked on that already anyway. I'm just pretty sure that...
I don't think it's going to look good in the last year or maybe even the last 2 years, but I think the first 2 years are totally... because the thing is... With guys like LeBron and KD, you have to remember that these guys are way underpaid even at max level right now.
Right. So like you can look at it as
the first 2 years could recuperate completely the entire value of that deal.
You look at it as a 2-year, $200 million deal.
Exactly. And at that point, he's actually probably just right at that level.
Right. Yeah.
And then, you know, he has like the off-court stuff, like... recruitment and all that. Like he has value still.
Even I totally agree. Yeah, I mean the problem with one problem with RPM that look people bring up lots of things that aren't problems with RPM, but we're not going to talk about that in the show either. One problem that does exist for RPM is LeBron, the impact that LeBron has off the court on making the players around him better. Like for example, I strongly suspect that J.R. Smith's personal habits have gotten way better because of LeBron James.
Right.
That's not measured, but that's not captured by RPM. Like the way that J.R. Smith does.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, the way that J.R. Smith is better when LeBron's not off the floor is not captured by Real Plus Minus. All Real Plus Minus knows about is what LeBron does when he's actually in the game. And to the extent that he makes everyone better around him in like all facets of their game,
it could actually
on and
hurt
off the
his
court.
Own RPM, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. But people never bring that up with LeBron, and I think they should. But
also, I would add that not just LeBron, like even just being on a winning team, I think can be pretty motivating, right? Like if you're on a team that goes to the finals, like that's enough of a motivation for you to work harder that
absolutely.
Offseason. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Cavalytics. As a reminder to those patiently waiting until the end of the episode for our contact info, if you'd like to contact us, you can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @cavalyticsnba. Thanks.